Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
The cost left my heart broken, so I had it closed for repairs. Wandering in my desert, your oasis appears. You're like a long, cool drink of water. I'm thirsty, that's clear when I taste you. I know you, I know you, I do. So can you feel it? Tell me, I need to know.
Everybody, it's Mark Rawson, and you are listening to the Men's Spiritual Radio Hour. As you know, this is a show that broadcasts under Spiritual Connections Radio, and we run it the third Tuesday of every month. As part of this show, what we do is we bring in different men from around the world to talk about their spiritual journeys and what it's like to be a man in the spiritual world. We have our special guest this evening, who is Jerry Gavin, and we're going to find out a little bit more about him in a minute. But before I go any further, I want to introduce my co-host, Mike. Mike, are you there?
Hi, Mark.
So I heard you just got back from Florida. For the listeners and everything, we were kind of just joking about this before we got on the air because I'm in Florida. And Mike is in the Pennsylvania, New Jersey area. And as he was going down to Florida and calling me up to meet up with me to see if it would be possible for us to get together, I was calling him to tell him I was up in the New Jersey, New York area. So, and we both agreed that once he went back to New York and New Jersey, I would fly back to Florida. So here we are. So yep. It's always great to have you on, Mike, and it sounds like you had a chance to enjoy some great weather when you're down in Florida. So,
yeah, it was wonderful.
Yeah. So we have our special guest. For new people who are just listening to the show, I'll just give you the little blurb that's up on our website. And, of course, if you want to find out more about this show or any other shows, you can go to the website, which is www.spiritualconnectionsradio.com. The Men's Spiritual Radio Hour is a radio show for men to listen and talk about their experience of spirituality in today's world. Discussion on the show aims to help other fellow men learn how to be able to open up their spiritual belief systems while still keeping their regular 9-to-5 life in balance. And Mike, was on last month, and of course, I started the show the previous month with my journey. Those stories and anybody else you want to listen to along with any of the other shows are all available through the archive. So feel free to go back up there and listen to each of our stories. On the bottom of our website, we have an email address, so any of the men out there who either A, have questions, or B, know of people they would love to hear interviewed on the show, feel free to drop us an email and let us know what your comments are or if you have any recommendations. We're always looking to interview great people. And with that, I want to introduce our guest this evening, Jerry Gavin. I originally met Jerry at a Mind Body Spirit Expo in New Jersey. Had no idea who he was, and was attracted to his booth. And, I think since then, I think the two of us have become great friends. Mm-hmm. And I've had, many opportunities to work with him and actually experience his work. For a lot of it, he has all his books that we're going to hear about, and has the channeling he does from an angel. And I'm going to be really interested to hear about Jerry and his story and how this all unfolded. So with that, Jerry, are you on?
I am here, Mark and Mike. Thanks very much for having me.
Oh, it's always great to have you. If any of you have heard Jerry, we've had him on some other different shows over the last year or so. Jerry will tell you later on, he's actually broadcasting on Hay House Radio now. So it's a really, with his busy schedule, it's incredible that we're able to get him on. So it's a great honor to have you on here. So I would just get the ball rolling. I mean, how did this start for you? You know, were you one of those prodigy children or, you know, or did this like develop for you in your later on in life?
I was definitely not a prodigy, that's for sure. I don't think I could ever see anything coming at that point. I mean, there were little things when I was a kid that maybe, you know, I think most people will have, you know, you hear a telephone ring and you get an idea of who's there, or you might have some of those little precognition kind of things like that. But no, nothing. For me, my childhood, my high school years, college, early years of marriage and raising two daughters, none of those things really, any of that time, was I going through anything, spiritual whatsoever. It's funny, Mark, when you asked me about being on the show, and you know how you, for different purposes when you're doing radio shows, you're talking about different things. But I was thinking about, you know, for me as a man, the things that started really changing me in so many different ways. And I think for me, one of the things that really changed me was I was into my 10th year being married, had two great kids. I was running a private nonprofit agency. My wife was in her last year of law school. So we were right at the edge of really being able to live the great American dream at that point. Everything was just all moving in the right directions. And then the unthinkable happened, you know, in terms of something I never kind of would have seen in my plan. And my wife fell in love with somebody in law school. And everything at that point kind of came crashing down. The relationship came crashing down. My inability to really focus on work caused my career to come crashing down. So everything just started to fall apart. And it was in that falling apart of everything that I think I started to try to make some sense out of life and out of all these things that were happening. And I started working a bunch of part-time jobs in order to be able to make up the loss of income of this one full-time job. I was a carpet cleaner at that time. I had a carpet cleaning business. I had a DJ business where I was DJing weekends, doing weddings and things. During the week, I was actually DJing at a go-go bar. I was doing all these things that were the furthest from a spiritual, you know, quote unquote spiritual experience that you would have thought anybody would have been having. But then I met someone who had just gotten a house, and she had broken up with the person who she was supposed to get the house with. So she had this big house, and I needed to rent a room because I just couldn't afford to get my own place at that time. And moved in renting the room from her, and found out shortly thereafter that the house that I had moved into, unbeknownst to her and unbeknownst to me, was just incredibly haunted. And
wow.
I know. Yeah, wow. not one of those things you side dog for, you know. And again, you know, I'm at this point, as I said, I was not involved in any of this. I was probably more of a skeptic than anything. You know, so when experiences started to happen that were like something out of a of a Hollywood movie, you know, like you're laying in bed at night and next to you, you hear this voice and there's nobody next to you and you hear this voice saying, get out, you know, or these apparitions of shapes that are just moving all around the room and, you know, it seems like the walls are like breathing themselves, you know. It was pretty terrifying. But the thing is, I was so convinced at that point in time that the stress of everything else was maybe causing me to lose it. I didn't even say anything to my roommate for almost a month of experiencing all this stuff before I finally had the courage to ask her if there was anything about the house that she noticed that was weird. And thank God I did, because she had. And then she started to tell me all her stories, which were very different stories, but things about jewelry getting placed, moved from one place to another, and, you know, shadowy figures that she would see all over the place. So we set out to try to figure out what to do to get rid of this energy. And, you know, we had both grown up Catholic, so we went to the local Catholic church, and it actually was kind of funny because the parish priest came to the house and he walked in. You know, I'm kind of ready for this courageous Catholic priest like the exorcist coming in and doing battle with the demons of our house. And he was so cute, really, because he walked into our foyer with a plastic, you know, thing of holy water, and he sprinkled it around the downstairs foyer and says, okay, this should do it. You're going to be good now. Like, wait a minute, Father. Most of this is happening upstairs. And he's like, it's okay. It'll spread. It'll be all right. Mm-hmm. So needless to say, it didn't really do the trick. And we started to just try to find something that we could do to deal with this. And a buddy of mine who had been in therapy for a really long time, who was one of the only people that I kind of trusted outside of Gail, my roommate at that point, to say anything to, you know, said to me, listen, you really should talk to my therapist. And I said, you know, I know you think I'm crazy, but I'm really not. And he goes, no, I don't think you're crazy. He says, but I'm telling you this because she not only is a therapist, but she also comes from a family of psychics. And he said, it's been the most amazing thing for me with therapy, because he said, I can't not talk about anything. As soon as I try to, like, hide behind something, she goes, well, who's so-and-so, and what's this about, or what's that about? So he said, she's, like, totally, like, turbocharged my therapy, and I'm doing great, but maybe she would know something. And we called her, and before we had a chance to even tell her anything, she began to, she told me to get a pen and paper, and just started to channel, and that was actually the first time anybody that I knew had ever done anything about channeling, a ceremony that we were supposed to perform in the house over a certain three different occasions, three different times, you know, in every room of the house in order to try to get these spirits to leave the house. And we did what she had suggested, and the house during the period of doing these three ceremonies was way worse than anything we had experienced before. I mean, doors opening and closing by themselves, the smoke and fire alarms going off. Stuff that if you had ever told me about it, if I didn't experience it, I would have just said, you're totally nuts. That stuff didn't happen. But this crazy stuff that just kept happening. And the last time that we did it, the last day, just before we were ready to do the ceremony, Gail hands me this pack of, you know, when you buy the AAA batteries and they're kind of in a blister pack of, you know, five or six of them together. She hands me this thing and puts it in my shirt pocket and says, I have no idea why I'm doing this, but I think you should have this on you, you know. And I made some kind of joke about, you know, being like the Energizer Bunny. but we went into it. When we were done, everybody felt so good, and the house felt so good after this third time we did it, to everybody but me. I felt like I had just had crap knocked out of me. And when I went to reach in the pocket to take the batteries out, they were almost completely melted in this this blister pack. And from that day, for the next like couple of weeks after, that I had that same effect on any kind of electronics and anything with a battery that I touched. I went through three car batteries. I went through two alternators. You know, computers, forget it. I can't even trust touch a computer. I went through two beepers. This was before cell phones. So I, you know, would wear a pager. And finally, because this was getting really expensive, I called the our psychic psychotherapist friend and said, listen, you know, do you have any idea why this could be happening? And she asked me if I was standing at the northern end, which she had advised that I needed to do in every situation. I said, yes, I had. And she explained, well, that was the place all the energy was leaving. Everything left through you. And I asked her, well, why didn't you tell me that before? And she said, well, if I did, chances were really good you wouldn't have done it, or you would have been so afraid when you were doing it. So I didn't want to tell you that, but, you know, this is just negative energy. Go out, hold trees, say prayers, do different things that will help you to get rid of it. And finally it did leave, but there was a certain level of perception at that point that started to open that was beyond anything I had experienced before. I wasn't seeing ghosts. I wasn't seeing seeing things, but I was feeling things in a different way. And guys, let me tell you, I did everything I could possibly do to fight that, because this was not what I wanted. You know, I didn't want to feel any of this stuff. I just wanted to be a normal person, you know. I wanted to come home and have a beer, watch a game, just relax. You know, I didn't want to worry about what was going on otherwise. And it kept occurring, and more different things would occur. I went to massage school. My friend Gail, who I was sharing a house with, who now today is my girlfriend years after, but at that point when we were just roommates, she decided to go to massage school. And when she talked to me about it, I thought, wow, this sounds like a great idea, because the money sounded wonderful. I was still in my, you know, million part-time job mode, trying to figure out what to do to get myself jump-started in a new area. And so I decided to do that. And in massage school, all types of energetic things started happening as I was working with people's body. Plus, the teacher we went to school with, beside being this very gifted massage therapist from the Swedish Institute, it turned out that she also had studied with shamans and folk healers in Latin America and Native American shamans. And she would share things with the class, and I was always the one who would get these really deep and profound experiences. So you reach a point where, you know, Gail and I always joke about it, where she says, you know, I'm the kind of person you don't need to hit me over the head with a 2x4 more than 20 times. But I'll start to get it at that point. And I started to get it at that point, and that's when I figured, look, I might as well start to figure out what this is about. And that led me into learning more and more about shamanism, learning more about shamanic journeying, and, you know, communicating with spirit guides and power animals and other forms of spiritual communication that way. And that eventually led to opening up to communication with an angel, direct communication with an angel by the name of Margaret, who identified herself as my guardian angel, but also as an angel who worked in the area of creativity and communication. And I began channeling her through letters, through automatic writing, first for myself, then later for kind of a select group of people that I felt I could trust to, you know, not put me away in a home somewhere because I had a new pen pal that was an angel, which when you think about it, I'm surprised people didn't put me away at that point. And then that progressed over time. And what's interesting is, you know, I love the thing that you guys say on the beginning of your show about how the show is sort of geared at helping you to deal with this, to deal with your spirituality or your spiritual understanding, and at the same time as kind of working within your 9-to-5, you know? Because for me, while all of this was happening on a spiritual nature, while I was communicating with Margaret and learning about shamanism and doing soul retrieval and doing all this other stuff, my 9-to-5 aspect then started to grow. It went from the part-time jobs to actually getting involved in banking first, and then going from banking to publishing, and holding every type of a job at a newspaper, from, you know, managing delivery folks who get the papers out to some short 15 years later, moving to a point where I was became publisher of one of the biggest community newspaper groups in New York City. And I didn't really realize, and I think it's only very recently that I've come to realize, that it was that same energy that I was working with when I was helping clients, and that I thought I was keeping so separate from my 9-to-5 world, that was actually charging my 9-to-5 world and making things grow at a much faster rate than it probably ever would have grown had I not been learning these things, you know, and just allowing those two worlds to kind of work in unison. Although to my work world, I never said a word about what I was doing because I didn't want people to know that there was this whole other side of me. I didn't want to lose the credibility of the profession I was in. Until 2010, when Margaret asked me to write this book called Messages from Margaret, which was a series of messages for the world to try to help people to understand what the myths were that they were believing, what the truths were that were really out there, and how they could live a happier life and raise their vibration and understand what their soul is and understand how this whole thing works. And I wrote the book and self-published the book. And that, Mark, was when I first met you. I had just self-published the book. And it was, I think, March of 2011 when you and I first met.
Sounds about right.
At that expo. And I knew that I was supposed to be at that expo. I knew, I thought that the reason I was supposed to be at that expo was to bring the book to the public and to kind of get better at talking about the book. But oddly enough, the people directly across the aisle from me at the expo wound up at Ariel and Shia King, who I believe are also on Blog Talk Radio, had me on their radio program. We met at that expo, and I was on their radio program, which happened to be listened to, oddly enough, by a woman in London who sells the international rights for Hay House in London, who liked the interview, read the book, asked Reed Tracy, the head of Hay House, if he would read the book and see if it was something that that he would be interested in, because she felt confident that it was a book that would do well in Europe. And here it is in June, less than just a couple of months after that expo, I'm getting an email from Reed Tracy saying Hay House would like to take over the publication of Messages from Margaret, and we release it around the end of the year. Spoke to Reed, and he was already engaged in conversation about, you know, a second book and speaking things and other stuff. And it was almost surreal in the way these things have taken place. And at the same time, I mean, Mark, you know me, you've met me. To me, I don't feel as though I've changed at all from that guy that I was, you know, before all of this happened. You know, I still feel very much like that same person, but all of these other things have evolved. So it's as though you're walking with a foot in two different worlds, you know, and trying not only to balance that 9-to-5, but just balance this kind of an earthly existence with the spiritual part, and recognizing that they're both equally important. It's not where a lot of times people will talk about, well, you know, I want to be a more spiritual person. I want to get away from what I'm doing. You know, I don't want to do this job. But 9 out of 10 times, that job that's kind of come to you as a way for you to be able to learn certain skills and be able to do certain things that you can turn around and utilize to be of service and to, mm-hmm. you know, to j- just be a deeper you within the world. So it's been a really weird ride.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'll make a comment first, and then I'll ask you a question. I know from a couple of years ago, you know, for all people who know my story, they know that I was in the corporate world for about 25 years and worked, you know, for some of the biggest companies in the world out of New York myself. You know, the thing that I found interesting is when I was working on my Harvard Business certification, one of the articles I read in the Harvard Press was related to the fact that 70% of all corporate leaders, you know, top CEOs of companies, use their intuitive abilities to make decisions to manage all these million and billion dollar companies.
Absolutely.
And I thought that was really amazing to see that, you know, for a lot of men out there in the corporate world, you know, who quote unquote, you know, don't get too woo-woo, you know, I think you'll admit that, you know, the average man in the business world uses what he would call his gut feeling to make a lot of decisions related to business. And, you know, I always – go ahead.
No, I agree with you. Go ahead and finish your thought, and then I would love to respond.
Yeah, so I thought it was always amazing to see that, and I think a lot of men out there in the corporate world would probably recognize that they're probably more spiritual than they realize. You know, and with that, you know, and I know you have something you want to say, but I want to kind of hit you with a question also, and that is, you know, because you had a foot in both worlds, did you notice or did you have to deal with anything as far as credibility issues once people in the corporate world knew about your book? But I'll let you go ahead and finish your thought first.
You know, it's interesting because the two things kind of really do go together. What surprised me was the level of receptiveness that I got from people in the corporate world. And I think that was because of the fact that those people that I met knew me and accepted me and had gotten to know me as a person. And what was so interesting was that the fact that it was me who had had these experiences made them look at the experiences in a totally different light. Because if it was someone else who brought this to them, they would have had a much harder time accepting it. But they knew me. They've known me for a really long time. You know, I'm that, you know, that really kind of down-to-earth guy that they've known a long, long time, the same guy that goes out for beers with them, the same guy who makes those kind of business decisions or does different things. So it did lead them to kind of say, you know, we always did, and now that I think about it, you've always had this sort of a calm way of dealing with things, you know. Some of my business associates, it's funny, have had like terms for me, like, you know, one of my old bosses when I worked for the New York Press used to refer to me as the Zen Master, you know, because regardless of whatever the situation was, I would try to keep some sense of calm, although sometimes for me it was like I was like the duck with my, you know, feet going crazy under the water, but on the surface I would seem very calm. And I would also always be looking for that Napoleon Hill seat of equivalent benefit type of a thing. And that was the other comment that I wanted to make. You know, it's such an interesting thing because most of the great business teachers, part of how I started really on this path even before I realized I was getting onto this path was that I started to read books when I wanted to get better in business. And oddly enough, I read books like, you know, Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill, Og Mandino, The Greatest Salesman in the World. You know, all these things that I thought I was reading because they were about sales and business. And what they really were about was a whole different concept. They were understanding a different way of thinking. They were understanding, they were about a different way of being. And And that is a lot of the great corporate people. I think, first of all, one of the things that makes some corporate leaders very distinguishable is just the ability to make a decision and to have the courage to make a decision and stand by it. And if you make a mistake, you make a mistake, you know. A lot of people will not do that. But there are a lot of great leaders out there who will weigh their decisions, they get all the information, and then they go with their guts. And for many really good leaders, it turns out great. It's interesting. One of my favorite teachers was Stephen Covey, and I remember reading his book about the seven habits of highly effective people. And I just did a reading before the show tonight. I did a reading where I was chatting with Margaret for a woman who was looking for some advice. And we were talking about the fact that she is has been learning so much and taking so many workshops and doing so many things for so many years, but has been so afraid to actually teach, you know, to make that leap and to teach her truth from her experiences and what she's done. And I was talking to her about the Stephen Covey book, and that one of those seven habits is to, as soon as you learn something, to as immediately as you can, to turn around and teach that to someone else. Because not only does it help you to reinforce the understanding of it, because when you teach it, you have to understand it to be able to explain it, but you also you need to be able to move from the role of student to teacher and to allow yourself to not always be in that place where you're the one who's, you know, not the one with knowledge, you know, to the place where you can feel that you have something to offer to the world. And I think that's one of the things that you find that in some of the really great business models out there, some of the best business models and the most successful companies and the companies that that are rated the best places to work in the world are all the ones where the leaders of those companies, many of them who are men, make the decision to do things within their corporate structure that empowers the people in their organization, where everyone is empowered to make decisions. They're empowered to bring their thoughts to the table. They're empowered to try to do what they can do to make the company a better company, and they're rewarded for doing those things. And, I'm sure there's a lot of guys out there, Mark, I'm sure you went through this, Mike, maybe you did as well. When you're living in the corporate structure, that is not the most empowering place for a man to be, you know. if anything, you go in a lot of times, and your sense of power is just removed immediately, and you're kind of a cog in that machine of what needs to be done. And it's great when you do work in an environment when someone
Jerry, I have a quick question for you myself in regards to that topic. So as you grow through working with your spiritual abilities, did you ever get to a point where you kind of was able to stand back and identify situations where you knew you were working with your intuition, what you might call more of a gut feeling, and working with your higher self, as opposed to saying when you're doing a session with somebody and doing like a pure channeling, you know, as you're doing a channeling and you kind of feel part of yourself stepping aside compared to during the workday where maybe the channeling might be a little more difficult, but you knew that your intuitive side was saying, hey, this is what I'm being guided to do. Did you ever stand back to think about the differences between that? Like, did you come to a realization at one point when you realized when you were channeling and when it was just intuition?
Yeah, Mike, that has happened definitely, and I think there are times that we're both in the business setting where, you know, I would go into a meeting and, you know, something would be being presented and it just did not feel right. You know, it would just be the kind of thing where in my gut I could feel that this was not the right situation. And or where personalities within a given situation were just not, it just was not feeling good, or the timing of something may not have felt right. And those would be like gut type of thing. Sometimes it was also personal stuff. Sometimes, you know, I'll give you a great example. I had an employee who was doing horribly, and she had been a good salesperson for quite a while, and she was doing terribly. And my executive management came to me and said, you know, I want you to put her on a disciplinary action. She needs to be put on a warning plan and do these different things. And I sat down with her to have this conversation to do a disciplinary action. And just prior to doing that, everything inside of me was saying, please just talk to her. Just talk to her and ask her, you know, what's going on. And so I said that to her. I just said, you know, I'm so confused because you've done so well for so long and you just have not been yourself in the last few months. Is there something going on? If I'm prying, you can just tell me, but is there something going on? And she broke into tears and began to tell me about the situation at home where her mom was getting Alzheimer's and her son was a manic depressive, and every day she comes to work and she gets phone calls from the son who is fighting with her mother and the confusion and everything that's been going on. And by the time we were done with that conversation, I didn't do anything. And I asked her what I could do to help. And it was the oddest thing because she said, I need to be with my family right now. Is there any possible way that you guys could lay me off so, you know, I would be able to be with my family, you know, rather than firing me for my performance, is there any possibility? And I went to the management team, and they weren't really receptive about the idea in the beginning, but then we talked about it some more, and they did make the decision to do that because she had been such a great, productive member of the team for such a long time. And I've talked to her a few times after that, and that really did change her life. It put her in a position where she could cope with the situations at home and help her family and not be torn between getting to work every day and not being able to know what to do. And it's funny, again, from the corporate mindset, you know, I had a mom who lived with us who had Alzheimer's, and then she lived with us for 5 years, and the last 2 years were very, very hard in terms of being able to care for her and not sleeping at night when she would be awake all night and then trying to go off to work. And they say that there's a huge corporate toll on family caregiving and the workplace, but it seems, I think, in a lot of places, employees, like HR people, are even being trained to be more receptive and trusting their guts and having conversations as opposed to just, you know, disciplinary action. So that's one of those situations. What happens to me also, Mike, is that even in the process of doing readings now, there are different sensations that I have for different things. Like, I'm not a full-on medical intuitive. But there will be times that when something needs to come to me that will help my being able to explain something to that person so that they can feel more of a sense of validity. I did a reading a few weeks back from a woman whose dad had just died, and she started the conversation by saying, I wanted to find out about my father. You know, he died about 2 weeks ago. And as soon as she said that, I got this gripping pain in my chest, horrible pain in my chest, and the feeling of just like the pain was there like this horrible gripping, and then this feeling of popping, and then I almost didn't feel my own heartbeat. And I put my hand on my chest, and then I heard the beat again, you know? And I was like, okay, you know? And my first reaction was to think that it was my heart, you know? And then I realized, oh, wait a minute. And I asked her, did your dad die from a very sudden heart attack, and did he go very quickly? And that was what the sensation was about, because that was exactly what happened to her father. And it was the right piece of information right at that time that put her at such ease over knowing that this was going to be okay for her to talk and to listen and to get, you know, to get information. So was that what you meant, Mike? Is that kind of...
Yeah, and that's a wonderful example, because, you know, I was just, as you gave that example, I was thinking, you know, spirit does that in so many ways to us, where we're, when we're working with different people and we're really meant to work with them on whatever subject it is that they're dealing with, it's like we become an empath times 10, maybe if it is only for that 30 seconds, just like you said you basically experienced. It was almost like you were experiencing a heart attack yourself. And I think
right.
by you experiencing that, you could just so much more put yourself into, you know, sympathizing with her and knowing what her, you know, relative had gone through, rather than spirit just sticking a note in your head and saying, oh, the person had a heart attack. You know what I mean? And so I really like that example, because I think it happens to so many of us that we might not even realize it, you know.
Yeah, that's it's
hey
so
guys,
true.
Let's take a quick break. Let everybody know what to listen to and where they can find more info. So if you're tuning in now, you're listening to the Men's Spiritual Radio Hour with me and Mike, and we have our special guest Jerry Gavin on with us this evening, talking about his journey. If you want to find out more about this show or any other show, you can go to our website, which is www.spiritualconnectionsradio.com. And with that, Jerry, what is your main website?
The main website is jerrygavin.com, GerryGavin.com. And that from there, you actually can find the Messages from Margaret Facebook page. And there's information there about the book, about the radio show, about a new project we're working on right now called 44 Days of Kindness, which maybe we can talk about a little bit when we come back from the break, and a bunch of other stuff. So, but yes, just go there, jerrygavin.com, and that's Jerry with a G.
That's great. Tell us about your radio show.
Well, the radio show is called Messages from Margaret. It's kind of a unique program. Just if I could tell the backstory of it, because it was really kind of funny how it occurred. When the book first came out under Hay House title, I was scheduled to be on a program. It's about new authors and new books on Hay House, and Diane Ray is the host of the show, and Diane is also the program manager for Hay House Radio. And that same morning, I was having a conversation with Reed Tracy about something else, and we were talking about expanding the knowledge of what's going on with Margaret's message, trying to figure out how I can best get it out there really well. And Reed asked me what I was doing, and I explained I was doing a lot of radio and doing a lot of different stuff. And he asked me to tell him what I did when I was on the radio. And I explained it was kind of like now, where I talk about, you know, talk about the book, I talk about my experiences and all different things. And he said, well, what about Margaret? When does Margaret get to talk? And I said, well, I've never actually done that. I mean, I do individual readings, and sometimes I will do group things when I'm doing a book where I've got a message for a room, but I've never actually, like, taken calls, you know, or callers called in, and I would speak to, you know, they would speak to Margaret. And he said, well, do you think you could do that? And I said, well, I guess so. I've never done it. I can try it and see what happens. And he goes, well, you know, Mark, I think you've met Reeves. You probably, he's got this great kind of a Midwestern sort of voice, and he says, well, there's no time like the present to try, and you're going on the radio in a half hour. So that was, I went on. He said, just tell Diane, call Diane Ray up and say, you know, I think that would be a great idea, and let's see how it goes, you know. So here I am, my first appearance on AOS Radio, and I'm in a cold sweat thinking, you know, how great is this going to be if I can't do this? And, you know, we're talking about it. And then I started to think, well, you know what? Diane said, people aren't used to calling into this program because it's an informational program, so I don't really know if they'll call in. So she makes that announcement that I'm going to be taking telephone calls and comes back to me on the break and goes, Jerry, I've never had this happen before. The board is totally full. So we come back from the break, and I start channeling Margaret, and she starts answering questions, and it went phenomenally. That led to conversations about maybe doing this on a more regular basis. And we talked about maybe doing it as a monthly program, but it would have needed to be pre-recorded. And then the idea of a weekly program come up in conversations, and I was excited to do it, and they were excited to do it. So March of this past year, we started doing it as a weekly program, and each week it's a different topic. It's on every Tuesday at 3 o'clock Pacific time and 6 o'clock p.m. On the East Coast. And there's always a different topic for each radio program. And then from that topic, sometimes there are guests that will come and speak. And the second half of the program is always me channeling Margaret to answer questions for callers, which has become amazing. I mean, callers have come in from all over the world. And I never really know from one time to the next. And then I get emails from folks that, you know, hear the telephone show and its replays who have, you know, we'll call for readings or just to make really great comments about Margaret and the energy that comes across in the program. So it's been a really, really great experience. It's been phenomenal.
Mm-hmm. I want to make sure so we don't run out of time. Tell us about this new program that you just started out.
It's called 44 Days of Kindness, and where the idea came from, I was actually sitting down and planning program topics for July and August, and when I was looking at the August calendar, when I first got started doing all this angelic stuff back in early 1990s, there was actually another person during that time who also was doing angel work. And she had come up with this idea of a special day that was to be coined like Be an Angel Day. And, the Be an Angel Day was a really, really nice idea. And they had actually kind of decided to make that the 22nd day of August. So the idea behind this is I was looking for something that would work around Be an Angel Day, and originally thought of the idea of saying, okay, on Be an Angel Day, maybe we'll do the same thing that had been done in the past, and we were trying to make this international, day of kindness. So that was the original idea, and then I kept feeling the sense of needing to talk to Margaret about it, and when I, just kind of put pencil to paper, she actually turned the keyboard on because nobody puts pencil to paper anymore. But I asked her, and she said, no, I would really like to expand this concept and start it in the June 9th radio show. So it would actually begin on June 10th and have a program called 44 Days of Kindness. And the idea being that it said, and this comes up a lot in business training as well, that any habit, any behavior that you have, that you repeat for a solid 21 days, even if there's a little break here or there, but if it goes on for a little 21 days, will actually start to become an ingrained habit. It will start to become part of your routine as opposed to something you do. So her thought was, if we start to ingrain as part of someone's routine the concept of thinking of doing something for someone, which is a conscious act of kindness, then imagine for a moment the energy that would change in the world if you get hundreds of people doing that, or maybe thousands of people, or even tens of thousands of people. So that was what we set out to do. And that was to set up this program called 44 Days of Kindness, which started on July 9th and goes through till August 22nd. Set up a newsletter for people to get messages of what other people are doing for their, you know, daily kindness type of thing. There's the Messages from Margaret Facebook page, which is facebook.com/messagesfrommargaret, has all kinds of inspirational things that other people are doing. And it really has been amazing, guys, because there's been this outgrowth of community that has started in the less than, I think, 5 days now that we've been going. The reach of this on just that Facebook page has been over 10,000 people who have been reached by this particular message. And I'm getting back amazing, amazing emails from people who are talking about how they've embraced this program and they're doing it with their friends. Or one woman who wrote me from Australia and says she does it every day with her daughters now. And they do these great acts of kindness. She does work with a children's hospital, and they bring things to the children's hospital together. Or they make these cute placards, and they put it in their neighbor's mailboxes or leave it on the cars. It just says, have a wonderful day. You know, you deserve to feel great about yourself. Pass it on to someone else, you know. So the idea being that we know we are barraged with just so many images every day of things that aren't working in the world, and, you know, disappointments and violence and all kinds of things. So if we could start this kind of an international or worldwide movement to get people thinking about making kindness just part of their day, part of their normal life, it could be so amazing. And that kindness could start right in your backyard. I mean, one person wrote in about a really cute thing. She had to go to the safety deposit box, and she had told her husband that she had to go to the safety deposit box because she needed to take out some papers for a matter that she was working on. And she got to the bank that afternoon, opens the safety deposit box, and inside there was a card from her husband with some money that he had left for her to go buy something for herself that day. So it was just a cool thing. I mean, that was just a lovely little gesture. And then there's other things that go out more so to the community. And the coolest thing that's kind of come from it, or at least I love this part, and part of why social media is so powerful, is an idea came up to actually start a soundtrack for the 44 Days of Kindness. So people are suggesting ideas for songs that really fit the mood, and they're putting up those songs on YouTube videos that have the song in the background and some great visuals that also go along with it. So we've had Wonderful World by Louis Armstrong, Get Together by the Youngbloods. There's a Natalie Merchant song that was put up today. Kindness and Gratitude, I think, was the name of the song. So it's actually folks are getting together as a community and creating this soundtrack. Like, so if this was like a movie to your life, this would be the soundtrack for kindness that we're working on. So it's a really, really exciting thing. And every day I wake up now and I can't wait to, you know, fire up the computer and look at the Facebook page and see what people have added. Each week on the program, we're going to be talking about things that people have written in about. We're giving away 44 workshops, Angels and Shamans workshop, which is a workshop, audio workshop I teach to help people communicate with their guardian angels. And then we're doing an event at the end of the whole thing. We're choosing 44 winners at random of folks who are part of our email blast to join us for an event at the end of the 44 Days of Kindness, to all kind of come together in a collective online group and have messages from Margaret at that point in time, have people talk about their experiences in it, and just kind of share it as sort of a post-event party. But the real idea, though, is that it just is going to keep on going on. I would really hope that after August 22nd, we can just kind of keep this going as an ongoing movement and turn it into the 365 Days of Kindness and make this a major part of what we're doing.
Excellent. Thank you. Well, we're getting ready to wrap up the show. And with that, I'd like to see, Jerry, if you can just share one really quick message from Margaret as far as what you've seen with the communication she's done and what she's addressed in the book. What do you think is the most important message Margaret wants every person to know right now?
That's a great question, Mark. I think it would probably be what she says in the very beginning of the book, is that she came here in very classic angelic fashion to say to fear not, because fear is that thing that kind of grips the planet. And, you know, speaking to men out there, I know, speaking from my own experience, it's fear a lot of times that stops us from being able to do the things that we might think we should do. And because of the fear of being ridiculed, the fear of allowing maybe a more sensitive part of ourself to show, the fear of talking about having abilities out there that might not be the type of thing that other guys might talk about. So we think, wow, if we do this, you know, I'm going to be like the butt of everybody's jokes. And I think that fear is what keeps us so much from realizing who we really are and what we can be and the life that we could be happiest with. So if I could just say anything from both her message and also from my experience, it would be to not let the fear get in your way. Just let go of plan B. Just go with what feels right in your gut.
Thank you. And Mike, it's always great to have you on. So thanks for being on the show this evening. And Jerry, thank you for coming on and sharing your stories with us. And everybody, make sure to go to Hay House, check out his radio show. And with that, I think we're wrapping another night. If you want to catch us, we'll be on the radio in another month with a new guest. So thanks, everybody, and have a great night.
Good night, guys.
Good night.
The cost left my heart broken, so I had it closed for repair. Wandering in my desert, your oasis refuse. You're like a long, cool drink of water. I'm thirsty, that's clear when I taste you. I know you, I know you, I do. So can you feel it? Tell me I need to know.
You've been listening to Spiritual Connections Radio. Have a great night.